Hello, this is episode 35 of the Ski Podcast. This week we'll find out where the most visited ski resort in the world is. If you can visit it on this European-wide ski pass. I have been in Grimentz and Zinal. Ian has gone all Boris and ziplined in VT, and we'll catch up with Husky, our friends, and also we've got a reminder on how to store your skis over the summer. The podcast is hosted by Ian Martin. Hi, Ian.
Morning, Jim.
And myself, Jim Duncan. Once the show is over, don't forget you can get in touch and correct us on anything we've got wrong this week, or, you know, praise us for anything we've got right. You can tweet us at the Ski Podcast, email Ian at the Ski Podcast.com or Jim at the Ski Podcast.com. One week, Ian, I'm going to get through that bit without getting it wrong. Or you can go to the website, the Ski Podcast.co.uk, or find us on Facebook. Whew, there we go. Do you want to talk about weather? It's a very British thing to do, Ian.
The weather in the Alps?
Oh, yeah, it's raining, but there's still loads of snow coming down. I had the best part of the season before the lift shut.
Yeah, Vautrin's closed last Sunday on the 5th, and I believe they had 30 centimetres of fresh snow just before they closed.
Yeah, it looked pretty epic. I should have gone over, really, shouldn't I?
When did La Clusa close?
On the 28th. They had quite a nice little party up in La Balme area. They built bars at different levels. It was free wine and if you wanted it, and there was bands. It was
Big question, though. Did you do the pond skimming?
Did I do the pond skimming? No, but I think I might do it next year. It's very tempting.
Right.
Wendy, regular listener of the show, her husband did it last year, and he strapped two snowboards to his feet to skim across the pond.
Okay, how successful was that?
I didn't ask. But the record is, I think it's 155 metres. That's a long way, isn't it?
That is a very long way, yeah.
But the reason
I look forward to seeing your video next year.
Yeah, I'll have a head cam on and everything. Now, the reason I brought up the weather, Ian, is that I'm a bit disappointed. I've not seen any marmots yet.
Aha. Oh, I'm very surprised. I thought they would be out and about by now.
No, I've not seen a single one, even from my new office log cabin. I see a few chamois popping down the field behind me. But
do you? That's great.
I've yet to see any marmots this winter.
Well, that could be a good thing.
Why is that?
Well, I saw this story this week. It said that marmots may well have been responsible for bringing the bubonic plague and Black Death into Europe.
Really?
Yeah. You know, rats have been unfairly burdened with it, and those cute little marmots that they sell, you know, stuffed toys of all over the place around the Alps were really to blame. They also kind of pin it to giant gerbils as well, which essentially is what a marmot is. And I also saw a story that said that in Mongolia, a couple have died of bubonic plague after eating raw marmot kidney. So, if you see any marmots and you're considering eating them and eating them raw, don't.
None of those was on my list of considerations, I'll be honest.
Okay.
I went to Mongolia and I didn't get offered marmot. I didn't see it on the menu.
You must have been really disappointed. Mongolia, any skiing out there?
Yeah, there is actually. In Ulaanbaatar, the only city where all the population pretty much live in this massive country, there is a resort called Sky Resorts. I didn't ski it because we were there in the summer and I had a broken collarbone, but I did sneak a peek. There was a little bit of snow. It's not massive, 6 kilometres.
Wow. Okay. Well, you won't be able to go there right now because there's a quarantine on the area, and authorities have warned people against eating raw marmot meat. So you'd think people would know, but there you go. Not as cuddly as they look.
No, I'm going to stick to feeding the fat ones in Saas-Fee rather than eating the ones in Mongolia. Now, we mentioned a minute ago that Vautrin was shut and the snow was pretty good. I felt pretty sad when the lift shut. Did you feel sad?
Well, I wasn't out in the Alps. If they'd been on my doorstep and I'd kind of seen them for the last day. But, you know, that's the end of the season. It's banked. It's been a reasonable one. I kind of look forward to next year, I guess.
I feel
that it's a long way away, but
I feel that Vautrin's is like, that's the definitive. That means the season's over when Vautrin's shuts. Do you think they do it on purpose just to try and be last, even though they're not?
Yes, definitely. So definitely, you know, there's a lot of kudos in being the first resort to open and the last resort to close.
But you can still ski. Hintertux is still open, isn't it?
Are we going to... Did anyone mail us to tell us that we got the number of glaciers open in summer wrong?
No. Did we?
Well, I haven't seen any. That must mean we got them right.
No, I think we definitely got it wrong, but I was actually referring to the number that I haven't been on before.
Maybe. But yeah, you can ski in a few places still. I think Hintertux, Stubai.
That's all I can think
of. Got any more?
No, not really.
Zermatt.
Oh yeah, Zermatt doesn't count. It's open all year round.
Right. Okay. But what about Kitzsteinhorn?
Kitzsteinhorn, is that still open? I don't know.
Yeah.
So Google.
Yeah, and there's a couple of others. I'm not an expert. I'm reading this off a list. The Multal Glacier. I don't know where it is. The Kaunertal Glacier. So they're both open till this weekend.
There's tons of places to go skiing.
Yeah, and plus there's some places up in Norway as well, I think.
Yeah, there's always places. There's a place we talked about before. There's a place in Norway, I think, that opens now for 3 months.
Yes.
Yeah. That's its season. It's right by a beautiful lake. One day, maybe we'll go. So, Valterin is shut, but you were in Valterin a couple of weeks ago, Ian.
Yep. Easter time, I was in. I was actually staying in Le Menuire, but I went up to Valterin's. Particularly wanted to try out this new zip wire they've got up there, which is a three-stage zip wire. I've done the one that they've got up in Arel, pretty high, about 3,000 metres. But this is a new one that they put in this year. And it's like a three-stage one, and got a bit of audio about it, I think, just now.
Okay, so I'm at the top of the B, as it's called, the two-line zip wire in VT, and I've just been kitted up, got my harness on, going to have my ski strapped to my back, and let's see how it goes.
I've got to be honest, Ian, that's a pretty annoying noise. Was it less annoying in real life?
Yeah, I mean, if you listen to it, I did try to, you know, scale that noise down on the video I did. But, yeah, you've got other things on your mind when you're kind of scooting through the air above the pistes.
Now, can I start? There's a video and it will be on the show notes. You can look at it. Now, it's hard to capture things in video for me. And I'm going to say, it kind of looks quite sanitised. Like, for me, a zip line is meant to feel like dangerous. This one looked quite slow. I mean, was the thrill there? Was it there?
Yeah, thrill was definitely there. I guess that's maybe one of the things that doesn't or isn't going to come across in video like that. But you know, you're hanging well above the. I guess the first stage maybe wasn't that exciting, but the final stage where you're coming down to Valterens and you're going right over the pistes is excellent. That's probably the long. It's also the longest stage in the steepest section.
And how fast you go? Do you know?
I think it's 65 kilometres an hour, but obviously it depends how heavy you are. I think the heavier you are, the better.
Oh right. So there's finally a benefit to being fat.
There is, although they've got a minimum and a maximum weight.
Oh, right.
My kids were actually gutted because they were above the minimum height, but they weren't over the minimum weight to go on it, which pretty rare that these days they actually, you know, or anyone would want to be heavier.
Nice views, though. It looked, the views, I'm assuming, are very good.
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky when I did it. It was a decent day, and yeah, absolutely, the views are fantastic. Obviously, it is open every day, but you know, they told me that one day they did 600 people in one day, and it's, you know, €30 or something a time. So, you know, I'm pretty sure that investment is paying back.
€30 a go, so it's not included in the lift pass.
It's not included in the lift pass, no. And, you know, some people would probably say, oh, you know, ski resorts are just turning themselves into entertainment parks. You know, it's one step towards Disneyland. But, yeah, everyone who did it was having a ball.
I think some resorts are definitely doing that, but I think others won't invest in that, will they?
No. The big deal, and, you know, what VT are like.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, Ian, I've watched your video on YouTube, and the autoplay resulted in me watching a video of a woman being humped by a dolphin. So thanks for that.
Right.
I don't know why.
It's probably related to your viewing history, Jim.
Definitely not. Well, we're talking about, you know, things that pop up on the internet randomly. One of the things that popped up in my social media feed, Facebook, I think it was a question asking me to guess what the most visited resort in the world was. I got it right. Would you have got it right, Ian?
If you talk about the total number of lift passes sold, which is probably the same thing, I think I would have got it right too, but only because I was at ListX the other week and there was a guy called Laurent Vanat there, and he was presenting a report which is called, I think it's the International Report into Global Skiing.
I want to know more about him, but first, Ian, let's not let the listeners ponder the question any longer. You go first. Who did you think it was?
Well, I thought it was Le Plan.
And I thought it was Le Plan too. And we both got it right. So this comes from the International Report on Snow and Mountain Tourism, what you said. And it's made by a man called Laurent Vanat. Who is he? Why does he do this report? He does it every year.
Yeah, I mean, he's a consultant in the industry who's clearly very well connected and very into stats. And he's been collating this information. I'm going to struggle now. Is it the sixth year?
I thought it was 10 years, but I might be wrong.
Yeah, right. There you go. 10 years it's been going on. And, you know, it's very, very interesting information in there. You know, the too long didn't read kind of summary is China is the only market that's expanding. The Western Europe has reached a peak. And lift pass prices in America are very expensive.
Good to know those things, Ian. I'm more interested in the fact that in this list of top 50 ski resorts in the world, Le Plan is the top, then it's Ski Welt Wilder, and then Lazark is third. You know, in that top 20, we've got Chamonix, Val Thorens. Why isn't the Three Valleys just considered one place? Because they would smash it. They'd probably even beat Le Plan and Lazark combined.
For sure. The way his list has been put together is, I believe, it's based on lift pass companies. So in the Three Valleys, you're seeing that the lifts operated in the Belleville Valley are a different company from the lifts operated in Courchevel and Mirabel. So you've got a different figure for Courchevel, Mirabel, Monterey from Val Thorens, Arel. And, you know, if you could aggregate them, then I'm presuming if you aggregated La Plan and Les Arcs, then Paradisky would be the most. But that's the reason for that.
All right. Well, there you go. I'm glad you spoke to him and you've answered my question. That makes that makes it better for me. I'm much better. The other thing I quite liked is there was a quote in it that said, "Survey of skiers' preference found that ski area size is the number one criteria when considering where to ski." Is that what you think about, Ian?
I think this was some research organised by James Gambrell from Duplair, which he also presented at ListX. Size of the ski area is very important to British skiers. It doesn't seem to be as important to other Europeans. And, yeah, I mean, it is something I think about. I mean, when I'm thinking about organising our family holiday, we're all reasonable skiers, including the kids, and you don't want to be, I don't think we would sustain a week in a ski resort if it only had, let's say, 50 kilometres of slopes.
Okay.
I guess it's not a problem for you because you live in a ski resort with, I don't know how many kilometres of slopes there are in the whole La Clouse area, but quite a lot.
I think we've got 180, and then over the road there's a bit more, so we've got about 200 and something altogether. So yeah, it's good enough, and it's challenges.
Yeah, I mean, we went to Kutai a couple of years ago, which is about 50 kilometres, and we went for 4 days skiing, and that worked out, you know, about right. So it is important to me, but it's very important to British people for sure.
I suppose it's quite an ambiguous sentence. The size matters. Didn't say if it's the biggest size or if, you know, it just needs to be a reasonable size, I suppose.
it's a factor. And then I think second on that was altitude, wasn't it? Because also British people are very concerned about how high that ski resort would be, which Europeans, I believe, are less concerned about.
Yeah, they don't seem to be as bothered. So, Ian, with Le Plan being so popular, I thought we could ask podcast supporter Snow Only about the property market in Le Plan.
Hi, Jim. This week we're looking at some property opportunities in Le Plan and some smaller villages a little bit down the valley. Snow Only has 42 listings in Le Plan, so quite a lot of options for people if they went to the website. The price per square metre in Le Plan is around €5,000 per square metre, which is a lot less than some of the bigger resorts like Val d'Isère at around €20,000 per square metre. So quite a lot of opportunity there. We have a one bedroom for only €69,000 in Montchauvin, and we have some really nice new ski in, ski out developments in Montalbert, anywhere from around 3 to 4 bedroom duplex ski in, ski out, really, really nice with spa, pool and residence. And if you want to be a little bit more centrally located, we have again some really nice ski in, ski out opportunities from €279,000 up to around €1 million, 1 to 5 bedroom. But most of these are ski in, ski out, so really, really appealing if you're a little bit if you don't really fancy a walk back to your apartment. There's also a really nice lease back opportunity in a ski in, ski out location, 1 to 4 bedrooms, €204,000 to €585,000, but it's set at 2,050 meters, so really, really appealing for a snowshore property. That's all from us at the moment. Take care.
There we go. Bye. Thanks, Mark. Once again, if you are considering buying or selling a ski property, then Snow Only is the only place for you, an impartial platform dedicated to ski properties with over 3,500 properties listed. If you can't find what you're looking for, then sign up to their property alerts. Everyone loves a newsletter, don't they, Ian? SnowOnly.com, mountains of property. There you go. Thanks for supporting us, Snow Only. Okay, this season saw the launch of the Magic Pass in Switzerland. The pass cost 900, I'm going to say chuffs. Is that all right, is it? 900 chuffs.
Chuffs. CHF. Swiss francs, yeah?
Yeah. Everyone calls them chuffs, right? The Swiss pass costs 900 chuffs. Unless you bought it the day before this podcast goes out, then you will get it for half price for next season. That is up-to-date consumer advice here, Ian. It covers 30 resorts, summer and winter, which I quite like. Places like Villar, Crans Montana and Saas-Fee. I've read a tweet from you, Ian, that said the Magic Pass resulted in lift pass volumes increasing by 30% in some resorts that were on board for the sign-up, which is pretty good.
Yeah, well, that was actually Laurent Vanat, because I asked that question at ListX, and he said, we're going to come on to Snow Pass in a minute, but I asked him how Magic Pass had done, and he said their lift pass sales for those Magic Pass ski resorts, which is a lift pass that covers, I think, 30 different resorts in Switzerland, was up 30% and their revenue up 27%. And that compares with revenue to 9% across all Swiss resorts. So you'd look at that and think, well, those resorts there have definitely benefited from it.
That's good for them. So it, as a marketing ploy, it works. And to get people to experience new resorts, that definitely works, right?
Yep.
But like you mentioned just there's a new pass on the block called the Snow Pass. Ian, tell me about that.
Yeah. Well, essentially, they've copied this idea of Magic Pass. They've looked at it. And they have, I don't know if they have officially launched yet, but I think yesterday or the day before they announced which resorts they're going to include. And it says that their normal price is going to be €895, but they're going to have a mere 50,000 available at €395. You know, they spread out. They've got a lot of resorts spread out across 9 different countries, and you know, could work out as value for someone.
It's worth pointing.
You know, none of the big resorts, so or.
No, but when I looked at the resource list, first of all, none of them were on that world top 50 list. And secondly, the list did kind of have a feel of a knockoff fashion market store, you know, like selling Bobby Hilfiger. There was what I liked, Voronaz, Vingen, and St. Antoinen. So, no, I'm not knocking them. I haven't been to any of those resorts, and I expect that, you know, you'll find some absolute gems, and I expect they're probably very good.
Yeah, what I do like is in their list of all the resorts, so you've got two or three in there which say, coming soon, top secret. Like they're about to announce them. But I know they've been negotiating with people for quite some time, because when I was in Aix-les-Bains, same place, a little while ago, which we covered in episode 33, I was talking to the commercial director there, and he had a meeting with Snowpass, and they were discussing whether or not to get involved in it. And whether or not by being involved and including themselves within it, they would actually be undermining their own season pass sales. Now, if you look at that the numbers from Magic Pass, apparently their lift pass sales and revenue went up a lot more by being involved with Magic Pass. But it hasn't convinced, for example, Aix, because I had a look on the list of French ski resorts, and they obviously decided not to get involved. And you're right that most of the resorts are pretty small, but if it works, you know, for them and they boost their revenues, then that could be great. I think it's probably, you know, if you lived in the area down south or, you know, somewhere near the Alps, and, you know, I did on Snowheads, there's a guy on there, I can't remember his username now, but he detailed how he bought a Magic Pass. Lives in the UK. I think they went out pre-Christmas, half term, and 2 weeks at Easter, and drove each time, and they used a Magic Pass to ski for their whole family, and they ended up, you know, Crans-Montana, I think, is one of the, you know, bigger resorts included. They went to Crans-Montana a bunch of times, but they skied in all these other little resorts, and if you're only there for like a day or so, then, you know, really interesting experience to go to these other places. And try something new, and, you know, got incredibly good value for money for their lift passes for the season.
Well, I think there's it's kind of a different market, isn't it? You know, the Magic Pass is Switzerland, so that's quite a contained area, really. So you can kind of do that. Whereas this Snow Pass is spread across 9 countries. So, you know, in Switzerland, you can pop to all those little resorts a lot more conveniently, and, yet, like you say, get a good value for money. Whereas if you're experiencing the Snow Pass across all these bigger ones, then you've got a lot more commuting to do. Is it going to be as easy just to, you know, move around and do that? I mean, who is it for? Who's going to buy this? People with camper vans, I assume.
Yeah, or locals who are in maybe a city who are going to do that same type of thing and go out to a bunch of different resorts, you know, during the winter, maybe every weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that type of option.
And it's, you only get 10 days in each resort as well.
Is that what it is? Mm. Right, okay, I wonder what the small print was.
The other question is, why is Scotland not involved? Who said no in that meeting? Was it Scotland or was it Snowpass?
Right, they probably didn't think of it, but who knows, maybe they've approached everyone. Does that even happen? Is there a Ski Scotland pass? I don't think there is.
I think there is.
Well, you send me the link to that and I'll include it in the show notes.
All right, then. Shall I send you a link to the Ski Mongolia Pass?
Yeah, come on.
So, I have recently been skiing in Grimentz and Zinal. And they were
in Switzerland.
In Switzerland, and they were actually instrumental in the creation of the Magic Pass. They were very pro it, and they really pushed it. I've been there and I've tried it out. Do you want to know a bit about it?
Yeah, tell me.
So it's in Switzerland, obviously, as I described. It's in between Verbier and Zermatt, so about 2 hours from Geneva. It's two sleepy ski mountain towns linked by free shuttle bus and a lift. And when I went, I parked in Grimentz, where you can access both mountains by cable cars. I started by exploring Grimentz, which is on the right-hand side of the Peace Map. The majority of the ski area is above the tree line, and it's absolutely stunning. Now, I went a week before the season ended and pretty much everything was open, so that's a pretty good result. I mean, it's been a fairly decent end to the season, so we can't judge up. But all the piece were really well kept. There was a nice mix of red and blue and blacks, and there was no really rubbish runs. You know, it felt like each run was kind of worth it and not put in for convenience or kind of extra mileage. So it was it's a good ski area. It's quite small in terms of, you know, big areas, but you know, you've got about 70 kilometres, which isn't bad. Before lunch, I headed back down into the town, so you can ski back or catch the cable car back into Zinal, into Grimentz, and from there you catch the cable car out into the Zinal area. That's quite a new link, that, but it's worth doing. Most of the runs in Zinal are reds and blacks. There's really very few blue runs, but each one's a brilliant little red and black runs with nice pitches. And it's not often you feel like the run matches the colour of the piece poles running down the side, but it kind of felt like it did there. We always talk about views and stuff, but Zinal has some epic views. There's this dam in the valley between the two resorts, and it's absolutely stunning. And you feel dramatically isolated in these two ski resorts. You know, like, Val d'Isère, you feel like you're really in the hub of something. Or even Chamonix, you know, have to go a long way to feel kind of isolated. But you feel like proper in the middle of nowhere with really good views. We finished the day, right, on this crazy black run called the Chamois. I posted it on our Facebook feed. And I think it's called the Chamois because you've got a bee-like one. It's really steep. You know, you come in on this vertigo-inducing...
Oh, I saw that photo, yeah.
Yeah, you come in on this vertigo-inducing traverse, and then you just stand there staring down, which is probably about, you know, 800 metres of down that is just a straight run carved into the mountain. It's insane, and it's so steep. Yeah.
I tell you what it reminded me of when I saw that photo. Actually, one of those speed skiing courses that, you know, someone like, you know, Jan Farrell, those guys would, you know, just go straight down.
Absolutely. They put no turns in. I probably put 100 in. yeah, it would mean it's insanely steep. It veers off and goes into this little rocky section. And then from there, you can have a breather and you look back up. And, I mean, on a fresh day, that is some seriously amazing free ride just there. You know, little rock drops if you're a bit adventurous. In fact, the whole area, you know, there's tons of free ride that you can drop at the back of the ski area and easily get back into the parking. So yeah, it's a pretty cool place. Well, there's a slight downer in, you know, if you want to park like I did, you have to ski that black run down or catch the chairlift, the cable car down. But it goes into a far end of a car park. So once you finish skiing, no matter what happens, if you do that and you want to go back to your car, you've probably got a good 5 or 6 minute walk. There's probably a free bus, but I was too impatient to wait for that. But yeah, I highly recommend it for, you know, a couple of days skiing if you fancy it.
Okay, well, that's another one to add to my list. If I get the magic pass, I can include it. As it goes, I'm actually going out to that area this summer. So I won't be able to test it as a skier, but I'm going on a trail running press trip to that valley. Ooh. So I will check out the reservoir or lake or dam or whatever it is between two places and assess the slopes for free ride potential.
Oh, there's tons of it. Just so you know, Ian, there's 115 kilometres of lift, 21 chairs, one downhill drag lift, the first ever downhill drag lift I've ever been on. It costs 62 chuffs a day or 290 for the season. There you go.
How did you find the chuff to euro exchange rate? Did it feel expensive over there?
I don't really think about it. I try not to think about it because it's even more long-winded for me because I get paid in the UK, then transfer it into a euro account, and then I had a third transfer into a chuff account to pay in chuff. So you know, I tried not to think about all that. Exchange money.
I'll tell you something that also cropped up in ListX, more research that showed that the perception of how expensive, for example, Switzerland is relative to the experience of people who go is out of place. So most people who don't go to Switzerland perceive it to be extremely expensive, but people who actually do go there don't think it's that expensive.
Really?
Yep. It's that gap, you know. But I mean, they might be comparing it with going, for example, in France rather than in Italy. But that's definitely something that, you know, leapt out to me that, you know, I found interesting. I mean, you know, when I've been to Switzerland in more recent years, I've been to Zermatt, which is definitely expensive. But I'm thinking maybe, you know, in Kremenz and Zinal, it's not necessarily like that.
I can't think. I think we paid about 15, 18 chuffs for a pizza. Should have had half a beer, and then that's the guideline set, but I didn't, so I couldn't tell you, I'm afraid. While we're talking about food, actually, there's a nice link for you, Ian. Who have you been talking to?
Again, at ListX, interesting, you know, industry chat. I met Paddy from Husky, who, he told me a little bit about, you know, Husky is the food delivery service in the Alps. And when we were in Le Menuire, we actually got some curry and rice delivered to our apartment, which was, it tasted good, it arrived on time. And I was interested to talk to him about how their season had gone, because their goal for this season was to expand so they could deliver to every single ski resort in France, which is hugely ambitious. And if you listen to the interview, you'll hear a bit about how it went. Great. So I'm here at ListX at the Snow Centre with Paddy Griffith, who is the founder of Husky, which I had the opportunity to try their product this winter for the first time. It was very good. Do you want to just briefly explain what it is that Husky offers?
Sure. So Husky came about when me and a mate from uni were essentially quite frustrated skiers. We were skiing every year together, usually self-catered, and we just realised how many chores there were to do on any given day, be it, you know, sort the kids out and pick up the supermarket stuff or cook or clean all that stuff. And we said, look, there really should be a service where food and drink gets delivered and you don't have to do all the cooking yourself and you just have more time to hang out with your family and ski. So we designed the idea came really, it was basically we wanted to create a product for ourselves. His background was in sales. I was a sort of marketing guy. We sort of said, why don't we put our heads together and try and come up with it? And then 3 seasons ago, we came up with the idea and launched it.
Yeah.
And we've grown, a fair bit.
Well, you have grown a lot, haven't you? Because it's say last season that's just finished was your third year. And you were explaining to me about how the big difference in your kind of base, which is in Bourg-Saint-Maurice, is that right?
Bourg-Saint-Maurice, yeah.
And you moved at the beginning of last season. So where did you move to and from there? Do you want to just talk me through that and the challenges that you had?
When we got going, in year one, we just wanted to test and see if we were the only ones who wanted this service or not.
Yeah.
So we just focused on the Tarentaise, which is, you know, Tine and Val d'Isère and Les Arcs and Saint-Foix. And we found a little kind of high street shop, essentially, in the middle of Bourg.
Yeah.
And from there, we had a little office, and we put a freezer in, and we could run the teams and deliveries from there. But really running the whole thing with 2 vans, just servicing that valley. And it went pretty well, and we stayed there for another season, and did the 3 valleys, and also tested a bit in the Porte du Soleil. So by then, we were looking after 20 resorts in 3 different key areas.
Yeah.
And then by this year, we suddenly realized that actually, you know, the demand was there. And so it was time for us to get a custom-built space, which had really simple things like a place you could drive a van into so you can load directly from the freezer into the van, as opposed to a load of blokes carrying boxes from a shop out to the street to load a van up.
Yeah.
But also, we wanted to try and develop our own product. You know, the first 2 seasons, we imported a brand called Cook from the UK.
Yeah, I know. I think the brand is good. You know, people know it, but you wanted to move beyond that.
So it's kind of like really good posh ready meals that people love. But what it didn't do was, you know, the Savoyard food that you eat when you're on ski holiday.
Yeah.
So, you know, where was the tartiflette, for example?
Yeah.
And so this year we also said, what if we built our own kitchen and hired a chef and developed a product, and we could actually sort of satisfy that bit. So we'd have 2 sets of products that work really well together. So our challenge was, had to stump up some cash, and we went out and did some fundraising, which we did with some private investors who liked the idea.
Yeah.
And then we found an amazing new warehouse build, which was basically across town in Bourg,
right?
Which was big enough to build a really big freezer. Like, we've gone from a freezer that's the size of a study in a house. So it's about the size of a squash court now. So a really big freezer that you can walk in. And then a big building where we've built our own kitchen, and we've got a much bigger space where we can have
grapes. I believe that literally before you're about to open for the season for business, you had a problem, you know, in the warehouse itself that you managed to find a way around. But tell us about that.
So on paper, that was a great plan, right? Which is, you know, how hard can it be? You sign up for a place and you fit it out.
Yeah.
But more or less every single thing we had to do to get the kitchen ready and get this new freezer working was beset by classic sort of French business disasters. So, the freezer was the first thing. We built the freezer and it was ready to go. And a truck had left the UK with about £100,000 worth of stock that would basically keep us going till the new year. So this is all frozen food that needed to be kept, you know, under 20 degrees. But the electricity company, with 12 hours to go, called us up and said, just to let you know that we're not actually going to supply you with electricity for probably 6 months. At which point we said, look, that, you know, that is a bit of a problem. And so the team had to do what they've been doing all season, which was suddenly magic up a solution. And so they got out and they managed to chat up some people locally, and we managed to basically extend a power line from someone else's business.
That's brilliant. It reminds me of the kind of start of ski seasons for people who've done ski seasons, trying to get chalets up and running. And when you go into a chalet at the beginning of the season and you realise that the ground floor is completely flooded over the summer or something like this, and you know your first guests are arriving in a few days' time. But you got around that and you sorted that out. And then I guess the other main challenge then this winter has been the logistics, because you're serving a much larger number of resorts. So, you know, I can see how from Bourg, you know, to get up to Tiene and Val d'Isère, you know, Les Arcs, La Rosière is fairly straightforward. But how do you deal with the resorts that are further afield?
Okay, so our ambition was to try and, could we serve all resorts in France, or in the French Alps at least? So that was everything from sort of Chamonix up in the north, right the way down to kind of Les Deux Alpes and Alpe d'Huez in the south. So this was a big challenge, but thankfully, like, two of our business partners are an ex-British Army couple called Anna and Duncan, and so they are the logistics experts. Like, they've run big squadrons in wartime conditions, and so for them it was one of those challenges to say, which, you know, how do we set up for this? And so they got, what do Army people do? They got a giant map out and they stuck loads of stickers all over it, and they planned routes. And I guess what we were trying to work out was, could we run it all from one big depot in the middle of France, in Bourg-Saint-Maurice? Or would we have to have loads of little kind of sub-freezers sort of sprinkled around the Alps? Which would save time, but operationally would have been very expensive. But ultimately, we committed to running everything from our place. We had to hire more drivers. So this year, we've been running a team of 10 with six different vans in circulation all the time. And essentially, what we have is we've mapped kind of bus routes all around France, or French Alps at least. And so there is a northern kind of line where refrigerated vans head north and go on a big loop of all the big resorts up there. Another one heads south and does the loop, you know, down the south. And then we have smaller vans which are doing kind of 2 or 3 hour round trips to Three Valleys, Pointe du Soleil, Grand Massif, and some of the more immediate stuff. And thankfully, it's worked pretty well. Like, I'm sure there's lots of ways we can improve it, but every single delivery got there in time.
Well, I can tell you that our delivery to Lehman Weir arrived exactly, like, within 5, possibly 10 minutes of the time that we'd arranged, which was very impressive. And when I talked to them, they said, oh, if we hadn't have been in, because, you know, they do quite a lot of deliveries, we were staying with CGH in Lehman Weir, they would just talk to the reception staff and they would let them in and they just drop the food off for us and stick it in our fridge for us.
Well, our drivers are especially trained to be sort of charming types who can sort of, if things go wrong, they can chat someone up and come up with a solution. But our ambition, though, is that, you know, if people are pre-booking before they travel, my aim is always that the food is in the chalet or the apartment before they get there.
Well, you know, from my experience, it was very good, and you've clearly, you know, had a massive step forward. So, you know, I think as well, I've said this before, that you're extremely well positioned with the way that the ski market is changing, because I think there is a kind of paradigm shift away from catered accommodation to self-catered accommodation, to do with all sorts of different reasons that we've discussed previously. So I think you're in a really good position for that, and I wish you the best of luck for your fourth season
next year. Thank you very much. We're looking forward to it.
No worries. Thank you.
I have to say, and it's nice to hear a positive business story coming out of the Alps.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously, it's not without challenges, but you know, they've got a good idea and they're working hard to make it happen.
So obviously, they're growing their infrastructure and putting more cars on the road, which I'm sure, you know, every business has to go through that. But what I found interesting, Ian, is in Innsbruck, they've launched a green Peace Basher. And I don't mean literally painted it green. It's the Piston Bully E100, and it's an electric Peace Basher. How cool is that?
Yeah, I did see that story today. It's 100%, you know, electric vehicle, this one, because there have been other hybrid versions around before. Yeah, it's great. I wonder, you know, your first thought is, what's its range? I didn't actually read that.
It can piste for 3 hours with a 6-hour charge.
Right, 3 hours. So normally they go through the night on 8-hour shifts, I think.
So you probably need more of them than a normal one.
Yeah, but it's a very good thing for sure. And, you know, resorts are always interested in, you know, promoting their sustainability. So I'm sure it will sell.
Right then, let's do some reviews. I haven't got any this week, Ian, I'm afraid. Have you got any?
Well, fortunately, yeah, I got one. This is from Merlin.
What a rubbish segment it would have been if we didn't have any.
Yeah, because, you know, send us your reviews. This one is from iTunes. They gave us 5 stars, Merlin 127. They say quite a lot. I'll just say that they consider Jim and Ian's meandering conversations a compelling and droll listen for any ski enthusiast. Their actual title is the best ski podcast this side of the Atlantic, which, you know, the competitive side of me thinks, are you sure there's better podcasts on the other side of the Atlantic? But then they go into everything we cover, chat, interviews, ski news, etc. It says this is not for the hip or the uber cool. What do you think about that?
Probably very accurate.
It says if Jim and Ian ever did that, it was more than 10 years ago, and probably they would probably not be called Jim and Ian for that matter. However, for the more discerning listener who appreciates the mountains for their wonder and skiing for the test, minus the dancing on tables to Eurotrash, this is the only ski podcast for you. Have you been dancing on the tables at all this winter?
I've been very tame this winter, Ian. I haven't really been out very much, which I quite enjoyed. It's been a nice break. You know, it's a different sort of season when you've got children and responsibilities as opposed to, you know, just getting paid 50 quid to clean some toilets. You kind of have a different approach to life, isn't there?
For sure. Well, thanks to Merlin 127. They also say, keep up the good work, guys. You make the commute something to look forward to when the next episode lands. So they should land to you very shortly. And to everyone else who's listening out there, to our listener, please do give us a review, send us an email, drop us a tweet, put something on our Facebook page. You know, all feedback is good. We're very interested in your views.
And yeah, don't forget to send the podcast once you finish listening to your hip and uber cool ski mates. I know in that, sorry, Ian, I want to go back. He said we probably would not be called Jim and Ian. What was your season nickname?
Grand Fromage.
Grand Fromage. You ate a lot of cheese, right? Or you were just a cheesy person?
I was the boss.
Sorry? What was
I was the boss.
All right.
The resort manager.
Okay. I see. You were the boss. Grand Fromage. I was... my nickname was Jim.
Right. Where do they get that one from, then?
I think my mum christened me James, so they kind of shortened it to Jim. Genius, I know.
Right.
But it did remind me, like, I know you know a lot about this because you used to produce them, but, you know, there was hoodies and season worker tops that had people's names on, and they still do this.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a thing to have your nickname in between your first and last name. But a lot of the time, they were literally just made up for the sake of it, just say you had a nickname. And, you know, most of the time, they were pretty rubbish. I think on one of them, I was called No Soap for absolutely no reason. I was very hygienic. But my favourite one that we pointlessly came up for, which, you know, it didn't stick, but there was a KP that worked in the hotel I was in. And he was partial to going out late and having a good old party time. And, you know, he skied a lot as well. But he would also, in the middle of his shift, say he was going to the toilet and then just have a nap on the loo for about 45 minutes till someone went and knocked on the door. So we developed a name and we called him Long Poo. Thought I enjoyed that one.
Right, charming. Sorry, was he a kind of a maintenance guy?
No, he was a kitchen porter.
Kitchen porter, because a maintenance guy is normally the hardest to find in a ski resort. You know, they're very good at being elusive and keeping out of the way.
Okay, Ian, right. I asked Simon from waxoff.fr in Morzine, a ski servicing company, who has taken us through what we've done in the past, to let me know what I should be doing to store my skis for the winter. Okay, so he says, basically, clean off any mud from the bottom of your skis from the end of season slush skiing. I definitely need to do that. And then you need to, with some sandpaper, rub off any rust on the rails that have accumulated after you've just dumped them in the back of your car or van or wet after that last day at the end of the season, thinking that you don't need to do anything. Right, so the next thing, once you've given them a good bougie down and clean them off, dry them properly. Let them really dry out and do that in a nice warm room or out in the sunshine. Then the next step is going back to basics. Remember that first time you tried to wax your skis? You want to do that. You want to put way too much wax on it, Simon says. So much wax that it covers the edges. And the key thing here is not to use cheap wax. Use the good stuff. Then put them somewhere dry and cool for the summer. And you don't need to do anything again until November, end of November, when the snow starts to fall and the lifts start to open. Then you can get them out and scrape off that big layer of wax and you're ready to go skiing next winter. Thanks for the help, Simon.
Good work, good work. And now you're living in the Alps. Are you going to snap up a few bargain end of season skis? Because they always have loads of great sales, don't they?
Well, I will do, but I'm waiting. On this weekend, Ian, it's Vida Grenier up in the Clusaz. Do you know what that is?
Well, Grenier's a seller, so I'm guessing it's a massive yard sale.
Yeah. I've been to one down in Annecy, and there was some really good stuff, but I wasn't prepared for it. I wasn't ready, so I'm researching what I think I might want to buy. Definitely reckon I can pick up some cheap cross-country skis and some cheap cross-country boots. Loads of kids' skis and stuff like that, all for sale, like €10 a pop. So I'm going to go for that first, Ian, see what I can collect. And I'll let you know.
Great.
And the other thing I'm going to do before we're back next week is I will be joining in the slope clean. So we're going to go out with the family in a bag and, like a beach clean in the UK. We're going to go and pick up what I assume.
Now, that is great. I blogged about the one in Out the Wiz for one of my clients recently, and I can't remember how much they found now, but it's ridiculous. You know, at the end of the season when you're going up a chairlift and everything's melting beneath, and you see all of these different things that have been dropped off the lift. It's a shocker, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I know my wife is hoping to find her mobile phone.
Well, yeah, if you're lucky, you might find someone else's. Yeah, good luck with that. Can I chip in something as we're just coming to the end now? You know, we did the Alps in our last episode, being the ski book group that we covered. That was back in episode 34. And we've done a bunch of other books over time as well. If there are any listener, or if you're a listener out there and you know a great ski book that we should read for our ski book group, could you let us know and we'll stick it on the list, because we need something else to read, don't we? Unless you've got one up your sleeve already.
No, I've currently found in the chalet that I live in the full series of Herman Mankell's Wallanders. So I'm currently working my way through that. So don't rush with your book reviews. I've got plenty.
Right, okay. And the other thing I was going to say to our dear listener is that this is episode 35. You know, we got 34 other podcasts out there that you can still listen to. Some of them, they're actually more than that, because we didn't number them all for the Pyeongchang Olympics. But if you listen back, I noticed that the numbers keep going up for all our old podcasts. Like the ones that have got the highest number of listens are 33, which was the drug dealers and ski resorts, which might be, it's a bit of a clickbait, 30, which was ski touring in Morocco and the Eddie the Eagle interview. 28, Wolves in the Alps, is also quite a popular one. But our most listened to episode of all time is episode 25. It's, I can't remember it exactly, but it's, the title is St. Anton Charlotte Banks, who's the ski across, or snowboard cross girl who swapped from France to Britain. And Billy Morgan reveals his favourite resort. So if you want to know what Billy Morgan's favourite resort is, have a listen to our back catalogue.
It's Le Plan.
It's not.
It's not. All right, then. I'll have to listen again. Right then, if that's everything, thank you very much for listening. Like you said, do get in touch with the show, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks' time.
All right, see ya. Bye, Jim.